Well, folks, welcome, and I appreciate you taking the time. I have to admit, I'm kind of getting, trying to get used to web conferencing. I've done a few of these, and I've tried to figure it out. Normally, some of you may have heard me before. I'm sort of a Bible thumper, and it's kind of hard to get that excited sitting here in my shorts looking at a laptop. But so actually, what I would appreciate is, looking at just sort of inviting you to my office, sitting and talking about some of the ideas that I'm working on. So I've done a lot of presentations talking about missions of librarians and what we should be doing. And I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about some new ideas that are under development. You are the future. Now, my guess is you've been spending a day and no doubt are wide awake and can't wait to hear more presentations, but you've probably heard a lot of things like this over the past couple of presentations, right? So you're the future. It's all about you. You know, be nimble. Be quick. Be nimble. Jump over a candlestick. Figure out how to move quickly or else you're dead. Innovate. It's all about innovation. It's all about coming up with something new. Leadership, that you have to point your way into the world. So, you know, et cetera. You're hearing things that the future is in our control. You probably heard a lot about social networking technology. You probably heard a lot about positioning libraries and which way they can go. And Stephen does a great job talking about, you know, steps to start with today. And so I'm going to guess that you've heard a lot of this stuff. And I'm going to guess that, since I know the speakers, you've heard a lot of really brilliant and interesting stuff about this. And so I refuse to repeat it. My guess is that you have yet to hear this about the future. The things that no one says about the future, number one, that we must kill the user to save the future. Now, I understand that you think you've all slipped now into a preview for the Terminator and that we're almost get Sarah Connors, but that's not quite what I mean. I've been doing a lot of thinking and a lot of talking with folks about this concept of user, right? And I'm not going to get too caught up, but you know, what do we call those people who walk in the library? They're users, they're patrons, they're customers, they're consumers, they're tweens, and blah, 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 blah. And I think that it's about time for us to get out of this business of using this word user for a couple of reasons. One, it's not a very good word. I mean, there's a classic joke that goes something like the two groups that have users are computer scientists and drug dealers. And while the libraries may be in the point of giving out free drugs to get people hooked, I'm not quite sure what that means. So right out of a good old-fashioned Oxford English Dictionary, a user is a person who uses or operates something, especially a computer or other machine. So, okay, if we have users, does that mean that someone's coming in and operating us librarians? And is that really what, well, maybe that is what we want, but not in all cases. A person who takes illegal drugs, probably not the people we want to pull in. A person who manipulates others for their own gain, that's probably more about some of the staff that we work with than the people who use the library. Or it's law, the continued use or enjoyment of a right. Here's my problem with this. User implies that there is this separate relationship. We have to understand that while user might have a rich and valued history, the history that I'm familiar with comes out of good old-fashioned information retrieval and system design. And it implies a separate relationship. So the idea there is that you've probably all seen a diagram like the one on the bottom. You've probably made them. I know I've made a ton of them, right? So, well, here's the user, and we draw a little computer, or we draw a stick figure person, and they come in and they use this service, in this case through the web interface, or they walk in the door, or they go through our databases, and they go through the menus. And we talk about user-based design and user-centered design, and it's sort of, you know, a bit of heresy for someone from Syracuse, the epicenter of the user, to get up and say that the idea of the user is dead. But the user is dead. And this is what I mean. What I mean is that the idea that there is somehow, we've defined people as not us, right? So we are the system, whether that's a computer system we're putting together, whether it's the library, whatever it is. And then there's this thing that's not us who's the ultimate beneficiary, the user. But that automatically separates them out. And so by looking at them as something that is separate from ourselves, I think that we ultimately curtail our own future. We ultimately put our own future in jeopardy. I was sitting down and I was working with a doctoral student, and she was looking at this, and she says, I'm studying, she's studying in higher education. She's studying people who help professors get grants. So looking at the sponsored research people. And she goes, you know, we're looking at building systems. So we have systems that identify the grant opportunities. We have systems that build profiles of the faculty. We have systems that track how effective they are. And she goes, I've looked at all these systems and I'm trying to figure out who's the user. Is the user the faculty member who's going to get the money? Is the user me who's helping the faculty member get the money? Who's the user here? I don't think there is one. And it was sort of this interesting epiphany that got us thinking and talking about this. And we started to say, you know, this whole notion of there's this sort of external user, we look at it as if this is the ideal situation. We had a situation, Andy Dillon, who's the dean at the University of Texas, was here at Syracuse, and he got up and he said, user-based design is dead. And everyone sort of grumbled. And I was sort of amazed to agree with him, because what he said was, user-based design started out as an ideal. We design a system around a user. We meet their needs. But it's become almost a politically correct saying, which is we take a designer and we interview a bunch of users until we find the user that we agree with, or rather the user who agrees with us, and we design the system around them. We say, congratulations, a user-based system. But that's false. That's not true. It's not a valid methodology. So I'm going to argue that as we talk about the future, and as we talk about how we shape the future, one of the primary ways in which we're going to make ourselves more useful, how we're going to continue the success that we've had, how we're going to make librarians even more essential than we've ever been, the first step we have to do is we have to step away from this, the idea of the user mentality. We have to step away from the idea of customer service. We have to step away from this notion that there is them and that there is us. So let me walk through a little bit. First of all, if we're not going to call them users, what are we going to call them? Are we going to call them patrons, which I always have images of salons in the 18th century and patronage, customers, clients, etc. Joan Fryer Williams, one of my favorite people in the world, had a really interesting solution. She was doing some consulting, and she said, well, I have an idea. Let's ask them. Walked down to the library floor and said, well, what do we call you? And their answer almost universally was, member. It was, well, I pay taxes, or I pay tuition, or I pay some overhead. I have a card. I hope that I have a sense of shaping it. I'm a member of it, right? So the notion that libraries have members, this ultimately sets up a very different relationship than we have users, even from the sense of marketing. Marketing as, instead of enticing people to come use us, the idea of building partnerships and ownership so that people feel an investment in us. Very different. So those who pay for, advocate for, govern, and yes, use the library are members. What's more, as a librarian, you are a member of that community, not a servant to it, of the community, not for the community. Well, what does that mean? Well, you know, little political tropisms, but, you know, we the people. Is a library of the people or is a library for the people? If you are of the people, meaning the community, whether it's an academy, whether it's a school district, whether it's a geographic community, a business, what have you, gets together and says, we need something here. We need something here that's about knowledge, that's about a shared resource, that's about let's us build us a library. You know, it's the old barn-raising thing, we put it together. That's being of the community. The library comes into existence by the consent, adoption, and efforts of the community. That's very different than being for the community, which the community's out there, and we now need to build a service for them. So they are our customers. We're separate from them. Being of the community means that as the community prospers, you prosper. As the community has a problem, you have a problem. Being for the community means you do market research and you figure out what do they need and then you try and fill a gap and such. I think that McDonald's has users and customers. I think Starbucks has users and customers. I'm perfectly happy being considered a customer or a user of Walmart. I want to be a member of my library, and I want the people who use the library that I run to consider themselves members, to have an ownership stake into it. Because when it comes down to it, I can choose not to use Walmart, but I want it to really hurt me if I don't support the library. I want to get into the situation where every person walks in and feels that they own the place that they're in, that they feel represented in that place, that they feel that this is part of the civic fabric of the organization that they're part of. Right? So I use the word members. Now, Dave, you're playing word games. We're splitting hairs. Members, users, customers, it's all the same thing. What we really mean is that we're out for and we care about people and we want to get people what they want. We're willing to smile at them and we're willing to make them feel comfortable. All right, granted. I don't think that if you use the word user or customer, you automatically disconnected from this idea. I think there are brilliant, brilliant librarians around this country, around this world, who are doing brilliant things, and they're calling people patrons, or they're calling people members and customers. So obviously, it is in behavior and action. But I think there's something a little bit more fundamental here. We have a fundamental feeling that it's not just about shifting away from this user perspective. Isn't just about, well, we're calling things new names. It really is a fundamentally different way that we interact with users. Now, this is where I want to be really clear. I don't think that the future, the way we succeed in the future, the way we prepare for the future, is radically different than how we've done in the past. In other words, I don't look at blogs and wikis and Web 2.0 and 3.0 and 5.0 and 9.0 as some revolution in humanity. I look at it as technology finally catching up to how people interact in the world, how people learn, how people want to behave, how people form communities. I believe that people are always social, and I don't believe that Facebook invented the idea of being social. I think Facebook discovered it. I think you see a lot of people who don't quite get what it means to be social, and so they do things like they throw friends in catalogs, and they throw tags on things and say, look, it's social. It doesn't matter that no one cares about this or has any ownership or any shape in it. Right, so library thing. Tim Spaulding was writing about the why is it that in library thing, their people are tagging like crazy. They're tagging their resources. Whereas in Amazon, that has the same capability to tag, that has the same tools to do it, no one does it. And his bottom line was, what he felt was, in library thing, people are tagging their own collections, and in Amazon, they're being invited in to organize Amazon shelves. And I want to be really clear that I think we need to fundamentally change how we think about libraries. Are those shelves that are around you, are they the community shelves that you happen to be caretaking? Or are they your shelves that you organize for the community as a benefit to the community? That's a fundamental difference. The other thing is that when we look at, so I'm a techie systems guy, when we look at how we design systems, something fundamentally is changing in how we design systems. The notion of user is in fact evolving. So, you know, it's June 8th. Steve Jobs was on stage yesterday. We can't get away without an Apple reference because he's the new, Thomas Edison. I read that somewhere, et cetera, or he's the devil, or depends on who you want. Anyway, he makes an impact. Though I have to say, when he had the tech difficulty during the keynote, I at one time felt joy and pain at the same time. Anyway, so we have this wonderful, you know, it's time for, we've reinvented and changed everything again because we have a front-facing camera and glass for the iPhone 4. Yes, I'll be ordering mine. That's me. But I want you to think about this thing for a moment. I want you to think about the phone. And if you have an Android phone, you're welcome to think about an Android phone. And I want you to think about what your relationship is to this device or your phone. Are you a user of this phone? And I think something really dramatically different happened when Apple and then other folks began introducing the concept of the App Store. Now, by the way, is this revolutionary? No, we go back to PC where you're loading your own software. But something very interesting happened in the telecommunications world when we introduced the concept of an App Store. Right? So this is my screenshot, and I've highlighted over here on the right, you know, I've 24 applications that are universal applications and 100 applications that I can put on my iPhone. So I have 124 things I can load on the phone. Right? What I want you to think about for a moment is when I go in and I load these apps or you load these apps, when you organize them, am I a user of this phone anymore? Am I a user of every individual app? Or am I something new? When I can use this customizability, and by the way, back to what we really need is the ability to shape this stuff and build our own even more easier, but we'll get to that in a moment. When I can pick which apps, what screens, sort them, organize them, figure out what they want, am I simply using this phone, or am I now orchestrating something new? Am I, in essence, orchestrating my telecommunications experience? Am I now have the ability to go in and to shape how I'm working with the world in a mobile wireless way? That's very different than the user mentality. If you look at the pre-app store days, if you look at the old Motorola days, when the carrier provided you with a phone and said, this is the interface. This is the way you go. You can take a picture here. You can put a contact here. You are a user. We're going to do user surveys. We're going to do studies. We're going to do focus groups. We're going to find out what you all want, put it together in an interface, and hand it to you. You use this. That's very different now than I can look at this thing and go, you know what? I don't like this app. I'm going to add this app. I'm going to add these apps. I want my phone to read comic books. I want my phone to play games. I want my phone to surf the web. I want my phone to watch my house for me when I'm on vacation. In fact, if I don't find an app, I want to build my own. Now, you could say, if you look at this connection, me to each one of these apps, I am a user of that app. But when you put them all in this new aggregation, you give me the ability to control where they are, what they do, and how often I use them. I am something different than a user now. What these become are building blocks for my telecommunications experience. So considering me a user of these apps is a lot like looking at the idea of building Lego sculptures and saying that I'm a user of these blocks. You know, so I can use these blocks. I can use all of them I want. I don't think I can make the guy carrying his chest out with Legos falling out. I can't do that. That combination, the way those simple building blocks were put together, is a creation process. It represents creativity, and it's something that I had to engage in, that I had to participate. If you want another word beside user, and if you don't like member, go with participant. The idea is that I'm engaged in learning. I'm engaged in how I'm working with the world, and I'm doing it in a fundamentally different way. Now, the building blocks around me aren't just in the form of, you know, clay and these. They're in the form of code, and the data can move from one to the other, and we can look at linked data sets, right? What we have is we can build from basic blocks and materials into more complex and individual expressions. With today's technology, these basic blocks have become upgraded, and we are now all creators. So whereas before we could build with Legos, or we could pick really gross things like, I want this computer, or I want this phone, now our blocks are interchangeable so that we can change our phones up however we want. We can change new capability to them on the fly. If one doesn't exist, we can create it. When you look at the mashup world, when I look at maps, when I look at how data can move back and forth, suddenly I can begin to shape it. So I want to take police violence data from Chicago and put it in a GIS system. I don't have to wait for Chicago to do it anymore using Google Maps APIs or other map APIs. I can go and create my own interfaces. We have created a very different relationship with the technology that we have today. We are able to take, as people explore and understand the world, they can now shape it. And so we look at some other examples of that. So we said, all right, so the iPhone and the App Store, and once again, and we can put in the plenty of other app stores, everyone that have. We can look at the App Store telecommunications as our way of crafting and creating a telecommunications experience. When you look at Facebook and what Facebook does with its apps, we can change our social spaces. I mean, this idea that we move from monolithic systems. Think about the integrated library system. The integrated library system is the ultimate compromise of a vocal group of librarians around the world saying, this is how we think we should organize it. And I think we would all suggest that we didn't necessarily end up with the high point that everyone wants. We ended up with a compromise which tends to be pushed lower towards the bar. Well, think now how you organize your Facebook space. You go into Facebook and you have a wall and you have friends. And you go, boy, I would also like to express how good I am at Bejeweled. Boy, I would also like to share movies. I would also like to share this. I'd also like to take a poll on who's the sexiest, you know, blah, blah, blah. You take these little bits of functionality, just like the apps on the phone. You're taking little apps around and you're combining them together in this experience. And now your social world looks like you. And are you a user of Facebook? Yes, sort of, but really what you are, you're an orchestrator where Facebook fits into that, the apps fit into that. If you're pushing out your library application, search, all those things can fit into it. It becomes a framework. You look at linked data and information stores. Now you can grab data out of, you know, WorldCat and drop it into this interface and drop it over there. And suddenly, these interchangeable blocks of code allow us to structure a technological environment. Right? And so now we have to talk about, you know, we're no longer users. This is not a user structure. You have to create this world. You can't get on Facebook, double-click on Facebook, look at the screen, and wait for something to happen. You have to participate. You have to engage. And what we know is, as one of the services we provide to our communities, not everyone is prepared to do that. And so we must step up and help them to participate. One of the roles that we as librarians play is how we can help them participate and shape. Now, let's take this a step further, because I've got lots of technology examples, and it would be very easy to walk away and say, Dave says the future of technology, or the future of libraries, is technology. And I think technology plays a very important part of our future, but not by any means the whole part. And as I said before, this technology is not allowing us to do something new. It is allowing us to do something we've always done with new and different scale. We've always shaped the world around us. We've always sought to control this. But let's take it to a non-technological, well, it's still a technology example. Think about books for a moment. When books were the basic building blocks, what could you do with them? Well, you could build a library. You could build a bookshelf. If we use the library as a very generic term, I could do my personal library. We could build the thing that's across the street in the big place. We could do the place that you're working. But in essence, when we couldn't really disaggregate that book, the best we could come up with were collections. Now those books are being blown apart, right? Now when they become electronic, we can mix and match pages and sections. We can create our own readers way back when. Now we can do them with electronic. We can add in illustrations. And indeed, since electronic books are not really books at all, they're just metaphors, we can now commingle text and illustrations and media and functionality into a whole new beast. Look at your book and think about for a moment when you're looking at the book that you're reading on your Kindle, your Nook, your iPad, your iPhone, when you're reading that thing. So let's say you're reading a book about something radical like buying a home, and you come to the part where it talks about building a fixing your mortgage. This is an electronic document. Why in the world can't we just have a mortgage calculator sitting right there by that section so you can actually do the worksheet as you're reading it? And by the way, if you want to then take the results and share them with your friend, why can't we have an IM or chat system built right in there? And by the way, I'd like chat in this book as well. Copy, paste. And why can't we, while we're reading that book, have a simple authoring environment so that as you're reading it, you can simply begin adding things like, boy, my son's reading the Percy Jackson books. Wouldn't it be really cool if I could take pictures, of course, non-copyrighted pictures, of mythological figures and go ahead and build a little app and drop it into his book so as he says, gee, who is Ares? Up pops a picture, up pops a description. This notion that we can take, we've already seen it in journals. Look at the interlibrary loan request. Who does interlibrary loan for a journal issue anymore? They do articles. We've destroyed the notion of a journal. It's now article by article. Soon it'll be section by section, figure by figure. And we can commingle this together. So now reading is social. Now the way we construct and understand knowledge is social, and we're participating in it. This creation, the building blocks may not be uniquely ours, but this aggregation, this collection, this creation is ours. And that's something radically new that libraries need to worry about, which is rather than us being a storehouse of other people's aggregations that we simply deliver, we become the place where that aggregation occurs, where that act of creation occurs. So what is a library? A library is where I go to create knowledge. And how do I do it? Well, there's this person there called a librarian. And that librarian helps me do it. Because I don't know how to do this at the beginning. Well, we can help you. All right? So, word game number two. Let's just keep playing this game. Word game number two. Is information then, when we look at this kind of environment, become the same thing as education? So I was working with a school library media specialist, and we were having a discussion about different research. And within that, she said, you know, really, information and education are the same thing. Now, if you say that in amongst a bunch of teachers, they will get up and beat you. They'll say, no, it's about pedagogy, and it's about how we structure curriculum and spiral curriculum. It's about constructivism. It's how we learn and theory and such. And the information scientists, by the way, will stand up and say the same thing. No, it's what's being transmitted in education environment, et cetera, et cetera. But in this world, where we're really talking about people participating and shaping things, this distinction between information and education, I would argue, becomes increasingly fuzzy and eventually merges into the same thing. And to do this, I've got to break into a little theory. Sorry to do it, but here we go. Which is, I've talked about knowledge, I've talked about knowing, I've talked about learning. Let me give you a little bit of how I see that happening. So this diagram, we've got our user there. I need to change the slides. We've got our user there, and our user has a question, as represented by the big hole in his head. And he wants to act upon this question either because of some intrinsic motivation, meaning that he wants to know the answer for himself. He will provide his own reward. Or some extrinsic motivation. Someone else will provide the reward, a good grade, a bonus, a job well done, whatever it is. And this question also comes from what they sort of know already. Taylor, 1968, wrote this, called Question Negotiation, still true. And so to know this, our user over time is going to change how he knows something. Now, how is he going to do this? What he's going to do is he's going to engage in a series of conversations. He's going to exchange language back and forth with other conversants. Now, what's a conversant? A conversant could be he's going to go talk to his buddies. He's going to go talk to his friends and neighbors. He's going to talk to a librarian, a professor, a boss, someone he works for, whatever it is. The majority of conversations that this user, wrong word, this participant, is going to engage in is with himself. That as you're reading a book, you're engaged in a conversation. The conversation is not with the author or the text. The conversation is with yourself. Do I believe this? Don't I believe this? What's happening next? Ooh, I want to remember that. Ooh, I should share it with so-and-so. That's a conversation that's occurring. And the point of these conversations are to develop agreements, which means over time, boy, I really do think this is the right way, this is the wrong way, this is a good talk, this is a bad talk, this is a good day, bad day, et cetera, et cetera. And these agreements may come from artifacts. We may get them from reading. We may get them from reading journals and books and watching movies. But ultimately, they're in our heads, and they exist in relationship to one another. So if this is how we learn, is by creating agreements, then this is the idea of learning and information and engaging and creation. These all become the same thing. And this isn't a user anymore. This isn't someone who goes and sits in front of a system that teaches them. This is a participant engaged in this construction, engaged in a learning process which is information rich. That information, education, in essence, become the same thing. Now, I've given this talk many a time. Go to my blog, you'll see bunches of other ones. And I always get this question, which is, okay, Dave, if we look at a library as a participation space where people come in and they create knowledge, what do we do with the 98% of people who come in, Dave, to get a book to read, that come in for leisure time activity, that come in for entertainment only, that want to read fiction and nonfiction? Clearly, you'd have nothing to say about that. You've just dismissed it all. And the answer is absolutely not. Because what is recreation and fiction and entertainment? We're still learning. Except instead of learning about how to do something or what someone else thinks, we're learning about ourselves. At the very least, we're learning what entertains us, what we think is good and bad fiction. I don't know about you, but I learned much more from Catcher in the Rye than my Algebra 1 textbook. Right? I learned a lot about myself in the choices of reading. I learned a lot about what inspires me. This is a learning experience. Learning does not just come from a textbook. It comes from this creation process. And everyone does it. And they may not do it in a classroom. And they may not do it in a library. They may not do it in a train, Sam I am. They do it. They do it in their homes. They do it in their hobbies. They do it in something they're passionate in. This is a learning experience. And they're participants. And so if libraries are going to support learning, if libraries are going to support our members, if they're going to support these, we need to give them the tools to create. We need to give them the tools to experiment. We need to get rid of this idea that there is a user and we serve them. We need to get rid of the idea that there is this customer out there that we market to. We need to get rid of the idea that somehow we are separate from the communities that we serve. We are intimately involved with them. And that's why, for example, I don't really find a problem with the idea that in the future, there will be more librarians and less libraries. I'm not the first one to say that. That We need to get out and embedded where they are. I mean, it used to be when you wanted an account, you had to go to an accounting house. You had to go to a place where they centralized all the accountants, and they gave them all calculators, and they gave them all a desk. And that was the accountancy. But then people realized, you know, we can hire one ourselves. And suddenly, this idea of accountancy became not working for an accounting house, but working for businesses, the organizations, and it became a distributed, essential functionality that society found useful. And I think we're seeing the same thing with libraries now, that people recognize the value of librarians. And we need to do a better job of saying what that is. And it may not be the collections behind us. It's our ability to facilitate this creation and knowledge process. Because just like we've looked at tools where we can shape technologies, we can look at, all right, the iPhone and apps, great day, books, we can move around. We also shape organizations. One of the things that drives me nuts is when I encounter librarians who look at the organization and say, oh, well, they won't let me do anything, or the library screwed this up, or blah, blah, blah. Talking at the library as if it's this somehow separate entity. The library, if you want to dismiss the building, which all it can do is fall down and decay over time unless we fix it, is just a storehouse for an organization, a conversation among people. That you are the library. That how you're shaped, how you organize, how you come up with an org chart is very much a way of you creating, of participating. And we need to look at how we organize ourselves as a way of understanding how we have value and how we can generate that value. So one of the new trends that I think is really very interesting is when we look at how we name and distinguish services. So, for example, right now out there, there's the classic divide between technical services and public services. And, you know, academics always get a little worried about this because, you know, what do we mean by the public, and really do we have public? And anyway, it's usually the people who sit behind in the back office and people who are crazy and sit up in front of the office. And I think this is a really silly distinction. It's a distinction that's historical. It's a distinction defined classically by procedures and standards and not by participation. Because librarians must constantly reshape the library, meaning the people within it, their staffing, their orgs, who reports to whom, to meet the mission of the community. Now notice there's another caveat there. All while helping to shape that mission. So let me break that down, and I'll do it first with an example. I really love this idea of research and instructional services for academic librarians, and I'll get to the others in a moment. But this notion that when you look at, say, a university, and you say, all right, I'm in the university. What is the mission of this university? Is it to have buildings and a library? No. Is it to take in tuition dollars and dump them out again? I hope not. Is it to develop new knowledge and pass it on to the next generation? Bing, bing, bing. I like that. So it's about research and instruction. So then when we come to the library, what is the mission of the library? Well, the mission of the library is to make sure the university succeeds. And the two missions, main ways that it does it is through instruction and research. So therefore, the library should organize itself around instruction and research. Why do we catalog books? So that we don't lose them? Sure, but why do we not want to lose them? So that people can learn from them and find them and incorporate them into research. So that people can create new knowledge. Why do we answer reference questions? Is it because that desk was there and we didn't want it to go empty? No, we do it because we realize that some people can't understand the systems, or they need a human touch, or they have questions that simply can't be typed. We do it because there's a conversation that goes on. Now, they have that conversation whether they're doing research, whether they're doing instruction. They need to organize resources whether it's they're doing research or instruction. When you look at the idea of cataloging books, well, that's what we do. Well, why don't you catalog the technical white papers that came out of the university? Why don't you catalog the courses that are being taught, the learning modules that are going in the classrooms? Isn't that information organization as well? So is it public service or technical service? It's all service. Everything that librarians do is a service. References is a service. Collections are a service. Cataloging is a service. And not every community has equal needs of each one of those. You are talking about the future. I think the future is going to be a place where instead of being able to walk into a library anywhere in this land and feel at home, you're going to walk into a library that looks like it shaped itself around that university. We're going to see that libraries have much less in common with one another, and librarians have much more in common with one another. We're going to walk in, and they're going to say, well, this isn't organized by Dewey or Library of Congress. No, it's organized by Syracuse, New York's feeling for things. But as a librarian, I can figure that out, and I can walk you through it. And you, as a librarian coming from another city, understand the need to organize it. So as librarians, we are more in common. This idea that there are academic librarians and public librarians and school librarians and law librarians and medical librarians, why do we constantly define ourselves by the communities that we serve? Yes, they influence us, but the librarian part of us is common and core to all of them. Research and instructional services for academic libraries, fine. Call it instructional service and pedagogy in your K-12. Call it economic development and recreation if you're in public. Call it what your community needs. That's what we need to be. The future is participation. Participation is dynamic. It's action. It means that we constantly scan the context and the environment and shape ourselves, our services, our organizations, our physical facilities, our virtual facilities to best meet the community's needs. And that means not one size fits all. The notion of cookie cutter library service should be gone. The notion of core values, core knowledge areas among librarians should be emphasized, but how they get turned into, the fact that you can take a policy from one organization and just plop it in the other is amazing. Really, every community is exactly the same when it comes to how they deal with internet services and loan policies and all these kinds of things. Right? All collections should be shaped exactly the same. This is nuts. They need to be modified for the community. When you talk to your community, never ask the following question. What can the library do for you? They have no idea. They can tell you what they use the library for. They can tell you what problems they have with the library. But if you ask them, what can the library do for me? They can't usually go further than that. But that's only fair. If you were asked how the sanitation system could be improved for you, you're pretty much sure if you don't know anything about the sanitation system, it's an improvement, right? The idea is to find out what are the goals and needs of that community and shape your organization to meet it. Do you need a building? Let the community decide. Do you need a collection? Let the community decide. Do you need reference service? What hours do you need? Do you need a catalog? Do you need to do a Dewey or Library of Congress? Let the community decide. But let's remember the second part of this. You as librarians are part of that community. You have a voice in it. That means when people say, get rid of the building, you have an obligation that if you feel the community benefits from the building, stand up and fight for it. Right? Yours is an important voice. One of the things that drives me nuts, I was having a discussion with librarians. We were talking about the future of scholarly publishing. And the idea was, oh, all right, so what we need to do is have the faculty figure out this whole, what are they going to use? Are they going to blog? Are they going to go peer-reviewed? Are they going to go open access? Are they going to do patents? Let's wait, figure out what they're going to do, and then we can organize ourselves. And I went, are you nuts? I'm a faculty member. Don't listen to me. I have no idea. I'm making this crap up as I go. What I really need is, let me think about it. An information professional that has expertise in the idea of dissemination of information and impact and citation. Oh wait, that's a librarian. Librarians should be leading scholarly communication. We should not be simply sitting back and waiting to see what Elsevier does with open access publishing. We should figure out how open access publishing fits the mission and either support it, change it, modify it, whatever we need for our community, our institutions. Right? The librarian should be the most amazing customizers of information services in the universe. We should be able to walk in as part of the community and say, this is what we need, and shape the community around it. So I'm just going to close, and I hope we can have some conversation here. But what I want to just leave you with is, first of all, hopefully, there we go. You are not a user. You are not a customer, you are not a consumer, you're a participant. You are in control of your world and able to shape your own learning and environment. I want this lesson to be crystal clear to you. I want it to be clear to my son. I want it to be clear to my 7 and 10-year-old son. I want it to be clear to my students. I want it to be clear to my faculty. You're in control of this. If not, you want to simply sit and wait for the future to happen. Good luck. People call David, he's the future guy. He talks about future. I don't talk about the future. I talk about today. You want to shape the future? The best way to predict the future, Alan Kay, is to invent it. And you need to do that. You need to stand up and shape it. You need to take control of this and have other people stop defining what a librarian is. You define it. We need to define it as a group. And we got sitting back, God, get out of the policy business, standards business. I'm reading a great book, it's called The Collapse of Complex Civilization, in which they talk about why did Rome fall, and why did these ancient organizations fall, and what might kill us. And the answer was, when an organization becomes so well adapted to its current environment, when the current environment is so predictable and they so perfectly match the current environment, and the environment changes, they fail. So the idea is, this is what the library should look like, and it's perfect, everyone loves us, and it fits today, and if you're not nimble or agile or able to change with the dynamic environment that we live in, you will go extinct. You must be able to adjust. You must hold on to your core values, you must fight for those core values, but you have to understand that how those core values get enacted in terms of a service, whether it's a collection, a building, a virtual service, whatever, that is variable. That is not librarianship. Librarianship is not the management of materials. It is not the execution of policy and process. Librarianship is not knowledge of cataloging, is not collection development. Librarianship is learning and education and knowledge and understanding context and solving problems. It is an innately human process. It is an innately education process. It is a process that will be valuable today, tomorrow, and 3,000 years from now. It is why library, it's why the city of Alexandria built their library, not so they could have a bunch of crap in it, but because they could make sense of the world around them. They need librarians in this world, not because of the stuff they're standing in front of. We need them to stand in front of us and lead the way into a world that is chaotic and changing and bring some stability to it. Not bring reticence, not bring conservatism, not bring nostalgia, but bring meaning to it, to bring the ability to interpret the dynamic world that's around us. You want to know what the future of libraries is? I don't care. I care about the future of librarians. I care about your future. I sound like I'm running for office. I'm sorry about it, but it comes down to this. You can close as many libraries as you want. Get the librarians in the organizations. Hire all the librarians out. We're seeing, once again, in academic context, we're hiring librarians to put them in physics labs so they can help get more grants. We're putting them in chemistry labs. We're putting them in the humanities department to make sense of this kind of stuff. This is where we're going. If your community needs a place, it needs a building, by God, build the most inspiring, beautiful building you can. But know that it's because you, as part of the community, need it. The future of librarians is neither in being a better user nor a better servant. It's not in becoming a better consumer of stuff. Right? We don't need to teach librarians to go to library school so that we can hand them the catalog from Elsevier and every vendor in the world and say, this is the one to buy. We need to send them out and say, this is the one to build. This is the one to partner with. This is the thing to fight for. And it's not about being a better servant. It's not about retiring in and waiting for people to tell you how they're needed. It's about walking in and being in your face. This is in your face librarianship. Walking in and saying, I can make your life better. And here's how. The future of the librarian is in being a true member and participant of the community. Alright, sorry, I got a little excited. So, rambling in my office, talk to me. What did I get wrong? Ask me questions. I don't know if I can hear you, so I ask you to use the chat environment. Hi. I assume it looks like they're recording this, so it'll be available. I also I've captured it, so I'll be streaming off my web if that's all right with Tom. So let me ask a few questions. Let me answer a few questions I've seen. One was, how do I imagine the library of the future? And I think it does come down to the community. So, for example, I look at Syracuse University. I look at Syracuse University and I think, all right, what's ours going to look like? I think we're going to have a building. I think that building is going to be very commons-like. It's going to be a lot of places for studying undergraduates and graduate students to come, a lot of meeting spaces, a very inspiring environment, casual things to eat. I think we're going to have lots of collections that are geared towards the humanities in terms of physical collections, and just about all the virtual collections will be digital. I think we'll have a few librarians sitting in that building, and we'll have lots of librarians that will be out in the different departments working. It used to be that when you wanted to take the library to people, you'd have to drive a bookmobile. These days, you bring a laptop with a Wi-Fi card, and you're there. Another question, do I foresee the elimination of librarian title, academic, law, technical service, et cetera? No, I think there's utility to them. I think that what I want to be, when I make the statement about we're all librarians, I think that it's important for the lawyers to feel that they've got a law librarian to go to. I think it's very important for the law librarian to realize they have librarians to talk to. I was talking with a few school librarians, and they said, you know, I'm tired of going to school library conferences where we talk about learning instruction. And then I hear about all this great stuff on Twitter and such about people in an academic library conference talking about learning instruction. Can't we all get together? I think that we're going to see, I hope we're going to see in the future, some of these boundaries between library types and library associations and library organizations begin to break down. But I think the other thing that's going to happen is that we're going to see the notion of what an library organization is begin to break down to be a little bit more peer-to-peer as opposed to hierarchy and setting standards. We don't want to exclude anyone, yes. So we design services as if they will be used by everyone. Ah, that's a great question. We have a saying, I teach information architecture, and the idea is if you design a system for everyone, you design it for no one. And what we're finding is that this is really a false question. And the false question is it assumes an all or nothing model, which is when you design a piece of software, you either serve all of the user's needs or you serve none of them. And in truth, what we're seeing is you build a framework and you build little bits of functionality and you let the user put it together. So I mentioned the iPhone example. It's not that out of the box, so I have an iPad, right? So yeah, I'm a gadget boy, all that other stuff. So I have an iPad. Out of the box, the iPad was interesting, but not terribly useful. It wasn't until this little company called Documents2Go, which has been around forever, which allowed me to do Microsoft Word documents and sync them seamlessly, that thing suddenly became more useful. My point of that example was, it wasn't Apple that made it useful. It was Documents2Go. But Documents2Go couldn't have made it useful unless Apple had built the equipment. And none of this mattered unless I found value in it. There's a three-way relationship in there, which, by the way, adds to a complexity, which is if any one of those breaks or goes out of business or something, we all potentially lose. We'll get there in a second. Well, we won't get there. We'll just acknowledge that. But this idea that rather than designing for everyone, what you need to do is design a very generalizable framework for everyone and then the capability to customize, customize, customize. So I look at things like the library catalog and integrated library systems. Rather than developing monolithic systems that we have to buy and then turn on or off features, what if we look at the integrated library system as a simple inventory system and a marketplace? And the marketplace is where librarians go in and say, you know, I'd like to geocode this collection and I'd like to show it on a map. I'm going to go ahead and write that capability. I'm going to hand that to my integrated library system vendor, and they're going to resell that capability where they'll take a quarter for every dollar someone buys this with because they provided the marketplace, and 75 cents comes back to me so I can come up with the next interesting feature. Rather than, let's survey every possible feature we can cram into this integrated library system and hope the amalgam fits. We're getting out of the days that we can build one system that serves every user. So Tom, I hope that makes some comment towards that.